This is where Nevada comes to hear and talk about the news in Nevada. 99.1 FM Talk.
News Time 99.1 and 92.3.
Folks, when one door closes, another one opens. Other than that, it's a good car, so call me if you're interested. 906. I'm John Potter. Craig is in Carson City taking your calls. This is all live and local. It's your weekend show on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Craig is taking the calls. I'm your good friend, John Potter. That's my new title. You know, I don't know if anybody out there can relate to this or not, but this was a shock to me. That when you lose your career, you don't know what to call yourself. You know, it was always news anchor, news reporter, John Potter and everything. And now when I go to appear or host events or speak at clubs and they kind of ask, who are you? Or, you know, they're writing their little bio for somebody to introduce you. I really, it's all has-been stuff. I don't know what to call myself. It's a existential crisis. So I've adopted the title good friend because I hope to be. I'm like your neighbor. I'm your Reno, Carson City, Yerington, Tahoe neighbor. That's what I am. And I'm happy with that. But when you lose the job title, you lose your sense of self, you lose your identity, and it's something I'm adjusting to. I got to keep the Channel 2 shirt, but they took my job title, so I don't know what to call myself. If you have a name for me, 884.
Keep it clean, people.
Keep it nice, you know? All right, Craig, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's a Saturday morning with a lot of things going on.
Yes, and we have a lot of great guests today. A fine week, wasn't it? The wildfire in Hawaii. You've probably, as the headline reads, Paradise Lost. And you have been probably as floored by the video and the pictures as I have been. As of this morning, 80 people killed, along with a fear that most have lost their lives. The folks who are not accounted for, which amounts to, what, 1,500. This small city started burning, and all of a sudden, it was like the Great Chicago Fire and the San Francisco Fire. It just burned and burned. They have trade winds out there. And they were blowing more vigorously than they typically do. It was a hellfire. In the modern world, we don't often see rampaging fire like that in a community as often anymore, whether it's because of building codes or setbacks or construction materials or modern firefighting capabilities. We thankfully don't have to face infernos like that on a regular basis, like the old days.
Unfortunately, we just had that one in Paradise, too, Paradise, California.
That's what I was thinking of, but that was, what, 10 years ago, wasn't
no,
it?
No, not even that far back, like five. But five. And that's what hit me about that headline. It says Paradise Lost, which triggered me going back to both the Paradise Fire in California.
Yep. Yeah, I know. But thankfully, it's not like it was when the old wood buildings were everywhere. I mean, but those folks in Hawaii, even the prospects for escape are not that great. They're in an island. The fire is fully controlled as of this morning. FEMA has now put the cost of rebuilding Lahaina at $5.2 billion. We are, as I say many times, blessed in where we live. So Craig is back. Craig, you missed our discussion last Saturday, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I just don't remember yesterday.
All
where
right.
Where we tried to fix the DMV. And this is important because I believe our former governor lost his election because of the failures of the DMV and Dieter. Because when people stand in line for 6 hours, they have a lot of time to think about an election. You know what I'm saying? And speaking of state agencies, I was told by some state workers that there is an effort, hadn't been on the news much that I saw, but Governor Lombardo now is making a big effort to get the last, and there are still many, get the rest of the remote employees who started working from home during the pandemic to get them back into their state offices. And the two state workers I know, they don't want to go back. They say working remotely, you know, they don't waste a lot of time each day dressing up and commuting and such. And they say they're more efficient with working from home. Now, Craig, you operate this whole mega broadcasting center in Carson City pretty much remotely.
I do Reno and the Reno studios and Carson City remotely. And I can do them from anywhere in the world as long as I have an internet connection.
Are you on the side of these state workers who say that I can do this at home? What's your take?
My take is I'm wondering if the roads weren't cleared because the snowplow drivers were trying to work from home.
Right. Okay. That's an exception. got us there. But more and more jobs you can do remotely.
Yes, you can. There's a lot more. I mean, compared to when... I would say even in the last 5 years, 6 years, with the developments in, okay, we have Zoom meetings, so you can, you know, have that.
I hate those.
Oh, I do too. Employers, I mean, you log in through their domain, so they know when you're logged in. They can actually tell if you're actually working. They can't see what you're actually doing for the most part, except if they look at you, except if they have a remote software that can see your screen. But yeah,
it's really,
oh yeah, well, John,
how long have
John,
had
here
this?
let me control your computer there in the control room. Reno, yeah,
okay,
so I can see what you're doing. Stop that, John.
Well, okay, but you know, it is okay on that side of the workers who don't want to go back to the office. Okay, they're right, it's the same computer, it's a different place. They're, you know, doing it from the office is just for show, they say. Yeah. But these work-at-home employees are being forced to return to state offices. I'll side a bit with the governor on this. We, us lowly citizens, we don't want to walk into a state office to get something done and have very few people in that state office to help us. Those of us in line.
Or even the county clerk's office for the counties. I mean,
I see it all the time.
Yeah.
There's
who
nobody.
Yeah. Who was it that said, okay, if you don't, oh, maybe it was Elon. If you don't come back into the office, just don't come in at all. Don't log in. We'll put your position up.
I heard some news about Elon Musk.
I figured I'd segue into that for you.
Well, thank you, because it's a local story. You know, years ago, now listen, folks, years ago, I got all this attention when I said that I have friends who work at Amazon in town who told me why they crush Walmart in sales. It's because Amazon has a huge advantage. They sell sex toys and Walmart won't. And I was being serious. I wasn't trying to be funny. And Jimmy Kimmel and that Tosh 2.0 and the Brett Baer, they all ran that on the air. The tape from that on the Channel 2 Morning News, and Hustler Magazine called me. They wanted to write an article about me saying that. And I told them, why interview me? Interview Amazon and Walmart, and you'll find out it's true. And it was true. May not be now. Somebody told me that Walmart does sell sex toys online now, but I don't know about that. Yes, how would I know about that? But anyway, back to Elon Musk. This comes from my trusty friends at USA Parkway again. And I appreciate Elon Musk, who is now what? 52 years old. 52. His accomplishments are amazing. He is undeniably a genius in his own way. He has truly earned every penny. But word is, and this is from the people I know who work at Tesla at USA Parkway, they tell me that when Elon walks on the floor through the factory, if you look up while he's walking through the room, he will call your supervisor and get you fired. Isn't that crazy? Can you folks call in and disguise your voice if you're still working there and tell me if that's true or not? Or maybe you did look at him and you're not working there anymore. Either way, I'd be grateful if you called us. I think it's true. You know, I asked two others I know who work for him, and they told me that's the deal there. So I have a few confirmations. Don't look at Elon. 884-9910. I love this gossip thing. I really do. Okay, so anyway, the governor, yes, wants to get the state workers to come back from their home and come to the state offices. The remote workers say the work they do from home is just as good as what they would do in the office. I don't know about the quality of work from work at home. I can only say that if I had to work from home, I don't think I could concentrate on the job at hand. There's always home stuff to do. Plants to water. There's cats and dogs, the family, the wife all need attention. And your office doesn't really know what you're doing at home and what you're looking at on the computer, but Craig says they do. Yeah, I'm sweating. So maybe the attention and time is lacking there. I would think so if I had to work from home. I don't know, is it? Which side are you on there, folks? 884-9910. I can only relate my experience as a former TV anchor and reporter. During the peak of the shutdowns, we did a lot of stories talking and recording people on Zoom and Microsoft Teams instead of going out to where we would get our stories. On TV, you would see us sitting in front of a computer monitor asking questions. And on the screen, you would see the interviewee answering them. I did not like that because being a reporter means you go there, you see the situation for yourself. But instead, you have some PR person giving their spin from their office. And if you can't actually see the situation and come up with your own questions on the spot, the story is going to suck. And at worst, be bogus. You're just taking their word. PR people never give you both sides of the story. So for that type of business, the media, yes, the quality really suffered working remote. Those who want to stay working at home say that without all the commuting, they have a lot more time to catch up on things, work things. They don't waste time. They don't waste time socializing at work, they say, and they can do their job anywhere. There are many people who still do this. My last breakfast at Black Bear Diner, there was a guy with his laptop in the table next to me with a headset on, talking to customers in other states taking care of their travel problems. I don't know. It sounded like he worked for Travelocity or something. And that was his office, the booth at Black Bear Diner. It was irritating. So, Governor, bringing remote workers back to the office, for or against, I'd be interested in hearing what you have to say about that. 884-9910. Craig had a good week. I had a very nice week. I spent the week as I always do. Cats get me up at 3 in the morning. No more need be said. I'm your good friend, John Potter. Our phone number, 775-884-9910. We're going to take a break, and I will be back on 99.1 and 92.3 FM News Talk. Time is 9:20.
99.1. The FM News and Talk of Northern Nevada.
Welcome to FM News Talk 99.1 and 92.3 FM. News, talk, truth.
Hello, I'm John Potter. Each and every Saturday, 9 to noon on 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk. I did an awful lot of walking. I like to do that. You know, reminisce. see how Reno's doing, planned things to talk about. I walked Thursday morning downtown to 6th Street and then up down Keystone, checked out the new Cracker Barrel restaurant, which is under construction, rapidly under construction now. Folks, if you have encountered a local shortage of handymen or plumbers, electricians, roofers, general contractors, they're all at Cracker Barrel right now. I mean, dozens were there. Frenzy of activity. Apparently, the people who own this Cracker Barrel location are expecting a prosperous business. I've never been to a Cracker Barrel. I don't know if Craig has, folks. I mean, if you have, I think our listeners would be very curious to hear what we can expect from this establishment.
Yeah, I have not been to one either. So, yeah, I'm interested in seeing what the hype is about.
My general impression is that it's an upscale Waffle House.
Haven't been there either.
A fancier Denny's with a Western motif. A breakfast place, I assume, mainly. And that's not all they're building at Keystone and 80 there. Oh, my gosh. Where Q and Cushion was and where the original Marie Choi's Mexican restaurant used to be. There's the newest Starbucks. We know that. Can't miss that, boy. The new In-N-Out and yet to open but almost finished besides Cracker Barrel is a new Chipotle there. A new Jamba Juice, and a new Mountain Mike's Pizza, all in this one former parking space that used to be in front of Q and Cushion at Keystone by the 80 eastbound on-ramp. How is this going to work? there are backups already with just the new Starbucks and the In-N-Out that's open. Also, no walking paths or sidewalks there. You can't say you can't walk from Cracker Barrel to Starbucks or to In-N-Out, even though it's the same corner. You will be dodging cars and crossing drive-through lanes, as this is being designed strictly for cars, which is okay. You know, it makes it drivable in that small space. There's just no room for walkers. Same deal with if you want to walk from the Reno Public Market to McDonald's on Plum. Find and walk through a space open between the cars in line at the drive-thru. I often, everywhere, because I do a lot of walking, I walk through parking lots, I scramble over concrete barriers, and I inch along bridges to get to places. Chick-fil-A off South McCarran, you walk between cars in line, even if you're driving. If you want a car wash there at Hutch's at South McCarran and Virginia, you now wait for quite a long time, I might add, because you're caught in the long Chick-fil-A takeout line to get a car wash. Here's another obstacle course. If you're going south on the right lane down Virginia near the convention center, you may find yourself stopped behind the people trying to turn in and get in line for the takeout window at Dutch Bros. On very busy South Virginia. It is so puzzling to see these things approved. Vehicles aside, we already have, and this isn't just a Reno thing, this is a nationwide thing, an increasing shortage of pedestrian walkways and sidewalks. We're becoming more and more a car society. The streets are designed only for vehicles, not for walkers, because more people drive and fewer walk. Cars got to get around. It's just the way it is. A good friend of mine actually drives to the gym to walk on a treadmill instead of just walking outside. The car-friendly sprawl of major roads and highways has drawn life away from the city centers. All our stores in America have spread to strip malls, which leaves our downtowns empty. I once asked for directions to a store at a 7-Eleven and the customer gave them to me, but they were shocked that I was going to walk the 1.5 miles to get there, even offered to drive me there. So there aren't many of us walkers. You may see me dart into traffic lanes on my runs because Reno has this odd patchwork, as you know, of sidewalks. Nothing recent, of course. It's just the odd way that our streets were designed and are still being designed. You walk on a sidewalk in town, and suddenly it comes to an end. And at that point, it's either you go in the street or you walk on somebody's front lawn until the sidewalk comes back in a block or two.
I had to comment on that really quick. You know, part of the reason for that is unincorporated Washoe County, you don't have to have sidewalks. City of Reno, you do. So we have these pockets of this house was never, the lot was, or this block was never incorporated into the city of Reno or annexed, and it's still county. So they don't have to have sidewalks. So you can skip it all together.
I would think that would be an automatic thing to have sidewalks if you're doing a street. I don't know. Now, this is a city of Reno, Craig, where I notice in my neighborhood, walking down my own street, and there's a sidewalk, and then it disappears for four or five houses, and then it comes back. I know we don't have a lot of walkers listening because I don't see many, but walking in Reno has its challenges. It certainly doesn't look like it's encouraged. We also, from what I see, and this is observations here from the walk, we have a shortage in town of license plates and escalator repair people. We're not as bad as Las Vegas with the broken escalators, but two major casinos downtown Reno have broken escalators. One of them has been out of commission for over a month. Folks, that's a career to get into. Escalator repair. Also, vehicle muffler repair. Lots of cars and trucks in town have lost their mufflers. And oddly, the smaller the car, the louder it is in that situation. Unsolved mystery. Okay, I'm going to take a break. It's time for Fox News. We're going to be back talking beer. Thank you, audience. If you have questions or comments about beer, that's our topic. Oh, this is going to be fun. 884-9910 is our number. We're going to break for Fox News on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. FM News Talk time is 9:31.
All the information for the entire Northern Nevada area.
They are bringing more illegals every day.
On one radio station.
At this point, I just kind of assume every politician is dirty.
Welcome to FM News Talk 99.1 and 92.3 FM. News, talk, truth.
You know, my wife says I talk in my sleep, but I don't believe her because nobody at work ever mentioned it to me before. I'm your good friend, John Potter. It's 9:37. We're live and local each and every Saturday. Going to the phones, 884-9910. Is this Mr. Paul Young of Shoe Tree Brewery? Hey, Paul. It's good. Where are you calling from, my friend?
I'm from the Shoe Tree.
You're open this early for beer?
No, we just get it ready for the big Saturdays every Saturday. So,
you're a business owner. Yes, you're a business owner. You never seem to leave the place. Shoe Tree
yep.
Brewing now has two locations, and I just found out just now you host a podcast.
Yeah, every once in a while, me and we do call it the Brewcast with me and my brother, and we just kind of give updates on what's going on at Shoe Tree and what we're planning and stuff coming up.
It's hosted by you and Mr. Beer Good. Who is Mr. Yep. Beer Good?
So Mr. Beer Good's my brother Jeff, and that's kind of his alter ego in beer. And he's the one that makes you feel good is the idea behind it.
Well, I don't know what the doctors think of that, Dr. Beer. It says you've been friends forever because you do the podcast with Andy and Harrison, and you have stories and knowledge about beer. I haven't, I just found out about this podcast, haven't had the opportunity to listen to it, but what beer stories are in this podcast? What beer topics have you had on this thing?
I mean, mostly we talk about, like, what's coming up or you know, advancements in beer. Like right now, we're working on
advancements in beer. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It's an old, ancient thing, but there's still new, fun, crazy stuff happening all the time. Like right now, we're working on a couple of beers with this fancy yeast that can take these things called the thiols, and all of that comes out where it tastes like guava and passion fruit and all these fruity flavors without actually adding those fruits into it. So
You're working with 10-gallon spores, it says here. What are 10-gallon spores, my friend?
So that's our little side project where we are growing mushrooms and stuff. We've actually made a mushroom stout with a few different mushroom beers. So we'll grow them, dry them out, and then actually brew with them to get, like, a nice umami, earthy flavor in a dark beer. One of our more experimental stuff. it's on the cutting edge.
The Mad Doctor feel beer good. You have two locations, Carson City and Minden. Paul, are they alike or are they different, these two locations?
They're very similar. Minden, the newer one, has a little more, I call it like the corporate feel, where we're able to like afford to brand everything on the walls and do some custom prints and stuff. And when you walk in, there's like a serving bar and a beer fridge right up front, and it's just nice and cozy. And then Carson was the original one, so it was a little more bootstrap, where it's like old concert photos and all that kind of stuff on the wall. But they're very similar, where we serve only our beer, besides like some wine and cocktails and stuff, and just a chill vibe, no smoking, no gaming. You can kind of get out of that feel.
So I'm curious, because I've been here most of my life, how are Minden beer drinkers different from Carson City beer drinkers? There must be even just slight differences here.
I would say Minden, they tend towards, like in the lagers, they like a little more high ABV beers, and they'll go towards... Notice they'll go towards like a nice double IPA. Carson, they get a little more into our sours and our experimental stuff out in Carson. But across the board, though, they'll drink the whole array of our lineup. But you'll just see like a slight uptick in one or two styles that are more popular. But
okay, so.
Similar.
Speaking of popular, which of your beers is the Carson favorite, and which of the beers is the Minden favorite?
So they actually will go back and forth. At any given time, it's either our Brunswick Blonde Ale, which is like a nice light lager-esque, but not a lager, and then our Shoehorn Double IPA. So it's a couple of our flagships, and they'll battle it out at either location. With Shoehorn being a slight favorite, constantly above everything else, and then when you have a seasonal release, that kind of will jump to the top of the charts for a little while everyone wants to try the new beer.
Folks in Carson City, this is next to the hot spas, the mineral baths, in the Sassafras restaurant building there. How did all this start? Were you guys home brewers who took the leap, and where did you get your skills to be?
So yeah, we started in our garage. I think the first beer we ever thought of, we were at like Thanksgiving, and we thought about making this beer, and we're like, "What? Can you make beer at home?" And we started home brewing, and then eventually thought it'd be cool to have our own brewery. We knew that we had knew nothing about the industry, so my brother went and got a job at a brewery. I finished up a degree in business at UNR, and then a couple years after I got out of college, worked in the brewery with my brother, and then we were able to get investment, and Sassafras had moved to the Hot Springs and had a relationship with the owner out there, and they had always wanted to add a brewery. So we were able to work out a deal and start the brewery in the at the hot springs.
What surprises people most about when you talk to them about owning a brew pub? What, because I know two people who want to start one. What do they not know about owning a brew pub? Or what surprised you most when you went commercial from home brewing and opened the brew pub?
You got to be willing to put in the hours. So initially you're going to be 70, 80 hours a week, getting things going and getting your foothold in. And then, after that, it was kind of took off and it was busier than we thought it was going to be. After we got into year two, things just started growing super quick. And so I always thought the hardest thing would be getting customers, but it's actually been maintaining and figuring out a responsible growth pattern where we aren't getting ahead of ourselves, getting ourselves layered in debt, and then, but also able to grow year after year.
Well, so those are kind growing. Of the challenges. Yeah. Second location already. And you have outdoor spaces to play games and host parties too. At both locations?
Yes,
sir.
Wow. Minden, yeah, we have a nice little patio around right in between the movie theater and us. People hang out up there. Sometimes we have like live music every Thursday out at Minden. And then Carson has like a little beer garden with lots of shade and a stage for music and stuff out there.
What's the Otter Pops show?
So that is our annual show. Jen Scafidi of Blunderbust organizes it and puts it on every year. And it's just like a nice, chill evening show in August every year. And for the Blunderbust set, she sends her friends around and they hand out at Otter Pops to everyone. And it's just an annual event. It's a lot of fun.
Sounds it. Okay, one more question. You're taking entries into a beer contest? Explain that, Paul.
So that's probably talking about, so our local homebrew store in Carson City, they call what they call the Thirsty Boy Homebrew Competition. We host it. He puts it on. The winner this year was a guy named Eric Hoffman, and he was actually the winner last year. And we take that beer that won, he was the best out of every beer in that whole competition, and then we're able to enter it at the Great American Beer Festival, the biggest beer competition and beer festival in the world, under the Pro-Am category. And so he gets to compete with us as a professional brewery, as an amateur, and compete on a national scale. And last year, we were able to win a bronze, so he's going again this year for a new beer, so we're excited about that.
I would be too. Shoe Tree Brewery in Carson City and also Minden. Paul, thanks for talking with us, and say hi to Mr. Beergood, or I'm sorry, Dr. Beergood for me, okay?
You got it. Thank you.
Okay, Paul, take care. 9:47, I'm John Potter. Craig said we got some calls during the Dr. Beergood expose there. Somebody called about ants. Oh, I love talking about ants. You can call back.
Dead ant.
Thank you, Craig. Thank you. You're in the spirit of the show. I appreciate that. 884-9910. It's always open topic, mainly local issues. 884-9910. I'm your good friend, John Potter. On 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk, we're going to take a break. FM News Talk time, 9:48.
Live, local, FM Talk, KKFT, for Smith and Mason Valley, 92.3 FM Talk.
Anybody else have anything they want to share today?
This is where to say it. Call now at 884-9910.
Hello, it's your good friend John Potter, live and local every Saturday morning, taking calls in the order they come in, is Craig in Carson City. Let's go those phones. Gene is calling from Carson Valley. Glad you called in, Gene. Welcome to 99.1 FM Talk. Welcome to the show.
It's nice to hear your voice, John. Hey, you opened the show with the mess that's been made of our access and roadways, with the designer roadways, with the RTC and their over-the-top budgets. But I do want to start locally before I segue into a more of a national issue. I want to talk first about Zephyr Cove. It's gained some notoriety this past 4th of July with all the garbage that was left there. kind of a one-off event every year that the Forest Service manufactures a crisis over a one-off event and then removes public access because of it. So what happened is up the Cove is in concert, in collaboration with NDOT, they went up there a couple weeks ago and put up about 750 no parking cones along the split rail fence there in front of the U.S. Forest Service Upper Cove, where we've been parking for decades. And the public showed up a couple Sundays ago and promptly threw all the cones over the fence and parked where they've been parking for decades anyway, and accessed their public beach that they own at Zephyr Cove, U.S. Forest Service. But it's that's just an example of how out of control the Forest Service is with respect to public access under the banner of what's called sustainable recreation. Yesterday, I was ejected by U.S. Forest Service law enforcement on the Inyo National Forest out of a perfectly legal dispersed campsite under some dubious claim that I was in a recreation zone. And I asked Forest Service law enforcement, well, yeah, isn't that what recreation is, camping? So there was no qualification of any kind in the area that I was camped in that would have prohibited such an activity. But the heavy hand of the Forest Service came down on me nonetheless. But I want to make a point for the audience, because I think it's falling under the public's radar, is the Forest Service is completely out of control with respect to access to our public lands and issues like that. And, you know, as an example, I was doing crunching the numbers the other day, and if the cost of Forest Service campsites were an example or put in the National Inflation Report, it would top even oil and groceries in terms of the rate of inflation. The inflation on public campgrounds is at 38% over the last 5 years. They're approaching $40, and they're gentrifying the public. Mm-hmm. They've taken whole camping regions in the Eastern Sierra and designated them reservation-only campsites. So there's no more spontaneous use of your public campgrounds in the National Forest here in the Eastern Sierra. Unless you plan the trip a year in advance.
Boy, times have changed. And Gene, you've done your research. My goodness. I've heard a bit about this. Now, I don't live in Carson Valley, and I haven't gone to campsites lately. But thank you for your personal experience on this. And I got to go to my next call, but you keep in touch and let us know the progress of your efforts to right these wrongs, my friend.
Well, only our members of Congress can bring an out of control agency under control, but the public needs to pay much better attention, or they only the wealthy will be accessing our public lands in the future under.
Well said, Gene. Well said. I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Julie, calling from Reno. Hi, Julie. I'm grateful that you called in. Good morning.
Hi. Well, thank you. I appreciate being able to talk with you and the area there. What I'm calling, I have kind of two things. One is the Cracker Barrel. It is a wonderful restaurant. I'm real used to it from the Midwest. They have excellent food, good quality of food. They kind of advertise themselves as an old-fashioned restaurant. They have meals all day long. They also have really cute things in it.
Well, Craig and I were asking what it's like. We haven't been. My impression was that it was kind of a fancy Waffle House. It's primarily breakfast, I assume. How are the prices, and what's the best dish there when this opens? They're building it in Reno.
The prices are very reasonable. It's not only breakfast. It's all three meals of the day. They even have like catfish, which is one of the few restaurants I've ever known that have had good catfish. Comfort foods, basically a lot more old fashioned foods. Prices run under $10 for a decent meal per individual.
What?
So, yes.
What? Okay. Yes. All right. And what's the dish they're famous for?
I'm not really sure. Like I said, they have their catfish, but they also have all kinds of food there. It's very, very flexible.
I can tell it's going to be very popular, and I just cannot picture that corner of Keystone and 80. What a madhouse that is going to be. But it looks like it's almost finished.
Yeah,
but there's more to come.
Yeah, I live right by there, and you don't know what's coming. But Cracker Barrel is a real reasonably priced family upscale restaurant, you know, where you can go and enjoy. The service is always great. And like I said, they've got wonderful gift shop there, too. So they're kind of unique. One other quick thing is I hope people get to go see Oppenheimer. It really shows how Washington is such a sketchy place. Did you know they tried to, they put him on trial there after he did the bomb and that sort of thing, and really did some nasty, nasty things to him.
You
and
know, I
tried to.
I haven't seen it. I'm dying to. What I love about movies like that is I get to go home and then I get to read up on it, and I'll buy a book or something like that to learn more. Heard good reviews about it. A lot of people tell me, well, of course, it's 3 hours. I have a bit of bathroom anxiety when it comes to sitting for 3 hours. I don't know what happened to movie intermissions. And also, they want to know, why do they have to have sex in the Oppenheimer movie? Anyway, I don't want to talk about that. Julie, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it. And thanks for the early review of the Cracker Barrel. Our phone number, 884-9910. I'm your good friend, John Potter, here each and every Saturday morning, all live, all local, on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Fox News next, FM News Talk time, 9:58.